A self-confessed old lefty, Bob is the pulse that keeps the show going, and you can't help but get carried away with his chaotic enthusiasm. If I had any criticism of the first Wrong Comedy Show, it would have been that I'd like to have seen more of Bob. Hello, and welcome to episode 23 of the Say My Wombles. The Say My Wombles is brought to you by some of us who put together Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're non-affiliated, independent, and non-partisan with the Say My Wombles. My name is Mark Lewis. I'm definitely nobody's puppet. Tonight's panel features Adam Proctor, Matthew Cooper, and the king of wrong comedy himself, the man I've just introduced there, a Batsford boy, no less, it's Mr. Bob Walshy Walsh.
Hey!
Welcome. On tonight's show, we're going to talk about the success against Stockport, with a transfer window progress for a change. We're going to interview Mr. Walshy Walsh about his time as a Womble. And of course, we'll do some numbers, because without some numbers, where would Adam be? Welcome to episode 23.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
Great stuff. Great intro again, Mark. Loving it. I'm loving the fact you've dug out that Michael McIntyre review of Bob Walshy Walsh.
It's a few years ago, that one, I do believe, actually.
Yeah, it was.
So, breaking everybody in gently, because I was sitting in a totally different part of the ground to you boys, how was your Stockport experience? Because as far as I can see, all the action in the whole game happened up the other end. And I was next to the away fans and just spent my 90 minutes goading them instead.
I was by the halfway line. It was absolute, I told you, either half didn't matter to me too much, but like, it was just a great day. I just enjoyed myself so much. I had such a lovely time, bumped into brilliant loads of people. We won 1-0, just perfect. Just a lovely Saturday afternoon down at Don's. Just brilliant.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Every time you're down at Plough Lane, it just is, you know, it's just brilliant. I love it. I love it down there. And it was a great day. I mean, brilliant performances. You know, I think, like we were saying last week, you know, how we're missing, you know, Towler, who's gone on, and a Sal. But, you know, Pierce stepped in, did brilliantly. I mean, to be honest with you, all of my focus was really on Lee Brown. I thought he played fantastically. I thought he was really, really good. I guess we now know why Curry might have been sitting on the bench. But I hope that's not the case. But Lee Brown played brilliantly and Pierce played brilliantly. It was a great all-round performance. And again, you know, Huss delivers a brilliant ball in and Pell does what he does. Fantastic. Great, great all-round. I mean, again, you know, my big concern at the moment, as we are, just over 24 hours before the window shuts, is I found out Huss is he's not going anywhere at the moment, but his contract's up in June. So one hopes that he might be put on a extended contract. I don't want to lose Jack Curry.
No, I mean I don't think we will, because it's so late in the day, but I suppose you never know if someone comes out with some crazy money, but then I guess the clubs that are looking at him probably don't have crazy money. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if does every player have a buyout clause? I hope not. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Saturday was great fun. I mean, it's funny. I bumped into a friend of mine I've not seen for a long time on Sunday. And he was like, oh, you still going to the football? And I was like, yeah. So we're back at Plough Lane. I said, it's like a party every game, especially when you win, obviously. But it still is. The magic is still there in that sense, you know. And I had a great day. I thought Huss played an amazing game again. I mean, his curling shot was, if only that had gone in. I mean, I'm all over him. He's definitely my new favourite. So I want an extended contract, etc. I don't want to lose him yet, because he's just really started to shine. So yeah, I'm quite excited. But it was interesting just to see a different sort of setup and a few changes. But we didn't get rattled too much. We still were able to grind it out and really play against them. And even though I thought they were very physical, obviously completely atrocious officials at various points, you know, that tried to upset the game. But, you know, we kind of kept it going. So I was, really happy.
I love the fact that, and actually following Walshy, exactly as he's just said before, you can just feel the excitement that you have as a fan of 30 plus years going to games. But I had three work colleagues with me who've never been to a game before. One of them's a Chelsea fan, has been to loads of Chelsea games. The other two, as far as I know, haven't been to any football at all. And we were in like row 4 of block 119, which is, again, in that far corner, just in front of the scoreboard. So we saw some fairly desperate defending. And we saw some interesting things first half. We didn't see any of the penalties or the penalty incidents, so to speak. But what was fascinating for me as a long-time fan was watching the reaction of other people. Because they were getting into the chants. They were like, you know, gesturing towards the away fans. All those things that some of us don't do necessarily because we got used to our rituals at football, so to speak. We were all quite well-mannered and placid in our own way. But they were really up for it, and obviously it helps that you win. One of my colleagues had player 8 as a golden goal and got really, really excited when Harry Pale scored until I had to point out that it wasn't player 8, it was player 4. And then she couldn't understand how that worked. But she was looking around the stadium for the big TV screens to see the repeat of the goal, because that's all she's done. That's an interesting way of way people watch football at a top level. They expect there to be all this mod cons.
Well, can I just want to clarify that? You were saying that two of the people that hadn't gone to football had no experience of football before, and one of them was a Chelsea fan. So I guess in my argument is that none of them have really watched football before. So, you know, it's a good introduction. Yeah, watching the replays. This is proper football. This is League Two football. And as for the linesman and the, the incident with Nick, and I've watched it back. It's just it feels like the Stockport guy almost runs deliberately into Nick. So I mean that, and then the bit where Josh pulls the ball back and he gets his legs taken out from under him, and there's nothing. It's just like it's like. You know, I genuinely thought the linesman had some money on the game. But still not as bad as the Newport ref. That Newport ref is just something else.
If you look hard enough, you can see people are now starting to post videos of Paul Howard, who was the Newport ref, and the penalties he gives at each successive League Two game. He gave one either for Warsaw or against Warsaw this weekend, and it was just as bad as the Newport one. Utterly pointless and utterly unnecessary. But the £5 thing, the £5 for every ticket, obviously revenue-wise, I guess that wouldn't have done much for the club, but I guess it would have brought new fans in. And like with the three colleagues of mine, if they're going to come back again and pay full price, then it's a successful experiment, I suppose.
Not just that, though, Mark. I mean, I think it's great. It does introduce new people to the game. That's fantastic. But also, you know, you're there, you're spending money. So they've made more money on the bars, more money on food and stuff like that. So more money in the shop. When I was coming out of the shop on the way out, it was packed. I mean, it's packed all the time, but it was heaving the shop. So, you know, it's a good thing. So I wouldn't be surprised if our revenue wasn't down that much, to be honest with you. I think that was a good call. Not all the time, but it's a good call once a season at least.
If we keep winning home games, it's always going to help, isn't it? You know, just a general vibrant atmosphere overall. Pub, the bars seem busy. I was actually drinking at a home game, which is quite unusual overall. But the most amusing thing, I think, generally, was we queued at half-time to try and get a beer, which I know is Adam's bugbear. And this is in the East Stand, where you think it's not quite so busy. And as we're queuing, one Mr. Danny Macklin, CEO of the club, wanders up to me and says, "Hi, Mark, how are we doing?" Looks at the bar queue and says, "Yeah, we need some more bars, don't we?" So they're aware of it. I don't know what they can do about it short term, but you'd like to hope by the end of the season they would have got some more capacity in.
I think they will have. I mean, I think, you know, I always manage to get a beer at halftime because I've worked out the ways to ensure that I do, which is, well, no, it's to use the swipe station. I use the swipe station. But what I did, before, I arrived quite early this because, oh, man, okay. Firstly, all my trains functioned this weekend, so that was amazing. They arrived on time, they got me there, and then I did the swipe station thing at half time. But before I got in, I went up to the kiosk where they have the fast sort of track arrow to check, because the previous game there had been a misunderstanding as well of that being a fast track space. So I said to the guy, I said, hey, is this a fast track station today, or is it just like carders only? And he was like, oh, I don't know. And I said, well, it'd be good to know, because there's a big arrow here saying fast track. And then a lady came over and said, oh, what do you want to know? I said, I just want to know where the fast track bit is, so that when I come, I don't join the wrong queue, because I know how to use the swipe station thing. And she said, oh, it's just on the corner here. So when I came out at half time, there wasn't any beers on the corner. So I saw the guy and went, hey, where's the fast station thing? Gave him my ticket and he poured me one out straight away and said, oh, sorry about that. So I was fine. But yeah, I think I did see a few people saying that they struggled a bit with going down to the bar at half time. But also I saw that Danny talked about the fact that, which I hadn't appreciated, was the fact that the staff, you know, they're only working on certain days, like a Saturday. So in terms of their experience and their training and all that kind of stuff, it's really big distances. And that I just hadn't thought about that, because obviously I got to work every day. So you kind of, you understand it being that. But of course, these people are working at different stadiums, probably at different times, just kind of getting different split shifts. So they're not going to understand the nuances of each sort of ground setup. So yeah, but what I did see and appreciated when I came in was that, there was definitely some people who knew what they were doing were talking to the staff. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I come from, I've worked behind the bar for 42 years. I pulled my first pint in the Sportsman in 1980. I've literally made a whole career out of it. And I just sort of, there's an amount of money you can spend on getting people served where it pays off and it doesn't pay off. But really, it's so slow. I grew up in the 80s in the city where they had an hour, so we had to get them served quickly, and so we could get three drinks out of someone in an hour if we actually served them quickly. And now, and only two if we were rubbish, and only one if we were completely rubbish. So like, I just think like we just got to get the people there serving, taking the money. Where are they? Why are we waiting so long? I just don't understand it.
So that's what we need to do. We need to get Walshy to go speak to all the people from Elio and actually educate them. We're going to return to talking about Walshy's experiences behind the bar a bit later on, actually.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, for me, if I want a pint, the pints I want to get are in the Phoenix. That's where I want to get a pills. They do a decent pills in the Phoenix, but they don't do it at the other bars. So, and I think a lot of people want to have the beers in the Phoenix, and they're not serving them elsewhere. And that's a problem. That's why the Phoenix is always rammed, and people are prepared to wait a little bit longer for a decent beer. So, my feeling is. Sometimes my feeling is that you probably need the by the horns, you know, because they're good staff. They work as quick as they can for the number of people that are there. But they need to be taking over all the bars.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. I mean, I think it is the bars upstairs where it's a different concession, and they definitely don't quite understand how to be that speedy. They don't understand the swipe station thing necessarily very well. Of course, you've got the vending machines. I'm not going near those for now because I can do the swipe station. It works, and you can still get the it's the pills and whatever through the swipe station, so it's not too bad. But obviously, yeah, the good beer is downstairs. But I'm not going to go into the Phoenix at half time because I just don't think I'll get served fast enough, and I'm not going to leave my seat early. You know, so I really don't want to leave my seat early, and I don't want to be late back because goals and things happen, and so I just kind of want to in out, you know. Maybe I'm just
it was brilliant. No, I'm not being it. It was brilliant on Saturday. We scored 49th minute. I think probably half the people are still out looking at getting food or beers or whatever it is. And Niall wasn't back in time. And I was with my daughter. And she just turns to me and she goes, "Niall's going to be pissed."
Yeah,
yeah.
Right. Exactly that happened with two out of four of the friends of mine that come.
Just gonna say to wrap that up, because what I thought was really interesting, that I know you post a bunch of Twitter stuff just to wrap up the pub thing, because I think we should have a pub on every corner. I know Martin's like on that, and it'd be great if they do different beers and whatever, and hopefully we can get there, right? But it's but someone posted on Twitter that from a link that you'd put about, and I can't remember which what it was off, but obviously there's a few people moaning about certain things, whatever. But there was one person who basically said, the Phoenix after the game is packed. Here you can see there's a club where if you do something a bit right, that people don't feel like they've just got to leave immediately. Now, most of us leave quite early because we've got to get trains and bits and pieces. And I'd love to stay for man of the match, but with the whole train situation, I'm not going to at the moment. But yeah, I think that's cool. Yeah. Yeah, any extra stuff after the game would be amazing, wouldn't it? You know, that kind of stuff really gets people to stay. And yeah, if it's good beer, which it is, then why not? Yeah. So anyway, sorry, Mark. I just wanted to wrap that piece up because I thought it was really useful because lots of people feel like they go to a ground and they, you know, when it finishes, you just leave, you know. But actually, we got the option to stay and it's nice to stay, you know.
I'll put on a comedy show.
Could you put on a comedy show that was not X-rated though? That's the only problem, Walshy.
Yeah, no, it probably couldn't involve me. But like, honestly, I talk to comedians about football all the time. We've even got a little website, a little Facebook page, comedians who want to talk about football without a four-letter word, and I could get a really, really good lineup, make it all about football, even. Make it all family friendly if I needed to, but yeah, the family friendly one would definitely not involve me.
I reckon it will happen, Bob. I reckon it happened. The upstairs bit is, you know, perfect for a gig. That hospitality thing, it will happen.
Yeah, I think so. Like, you know, obviously, like, we need to invest in lighting and stuff and make it perfect. And then I'm absolutely sure we could do that. There's people, like, bigger than me, like Jeff Norcott, that would be absolutely delighted to put one of his, like, build-up shows to a tour at AFC Wimbledon and make money for us.
There's loads of stuff up there, Bob. Anyhow, we'll have a chat about that another time, but mate, it will happen, I'm sure.
Yay!
Nothing wrong with trying to plan commercial events on behalf of the club whilst on a podcast. So it's the elephant in the room. The elephant in the room for weeks was Asal going, Asal staying, and now he's gone and he's immediately been loaned out somewhere else, but that's someone else's business because I guess we've got the money and we've banked it, hopefully, and we're getting profit from it or whatever. Who knows what will happen with it next. But there is, as Matt says, just over 24 hours left in the transfer window. Do we think that we need anything else? Do we think we need to strengthen anywhere else? I'm working on the theory that the rumours about Curry are just rumours and I know nothing else, and therefore nothing will happen there. But if Curry stays, we obviously want him to, and no one else goes out, then do we need to bring anyone else in?
Would you argue another? I mean, I know Marsh is there, but would you argue another centre mid? Would you argue another striker, out and out striker? Because it does feel like the players we've got in. Ali's can probably play alongside Josh, but do we need another striker?
I think it's someone to replace Davidson. Someone who can do what Davidson does, really, without, because otherwise I think Davidson's going to burn out. That's what I'm worried about. You know, yeah, he's a, you know, fit young lad, but it'd be good to have someone like him.
Isn't that what Ali's doing, I reckon? Ali's sort of like, yeah, I think he can play that role. He's quick. He's annoying. I liked him.
Yeah. I think one more striker, I think, would be a good thing. And mate, I don't know. Do we need any more centre backs as well? I mean, who have we got? You've got PK, Pierce, and Nightingale. Who else drops in at centre back?
That's probably the weak area.
Yeah.
I've got to say, PK's been fantastic. I'm such a fan of PK. Like, he's really stood up this year. Like, what a fella. He was probably our fifth choice centre back at the start of the season, all of us. And I've always loved him, and I think he stood up, and I'm so proud of him. Well done, PK. Proper South London boy.
Oh, immense.
Yeah, well said indeed. And they keep keeping clean sheets. And, you know, people had the concerns about Pierce. Pierce came in back in the team. Obviously, when we lost Towler, nobody wanted to lose Towler. And we haven't let a goal in since then. No. We haven't let a goal in since Towler left.
No. PK.
Yeah. It's just that bit in the final third. It's that bit where we threaten. So I think to get another centre forward in would be quite good.
What I found interesting is they brought Little in, and apparently he's an attacking central midfield player from Forest Green, and he scored loads of goals for Torquay. They haven't played him at number 10. That's the role Pell's playing, obviously, and as a physical presence, you can't really replace what Pell offers us. So he played Little in the middle, as in the midfield two with Woodyard. He made more tackles than anyone else. He played more passes than anyone else on the whole team and the whole pitch, actually, including Stockport players as well. And it almost went unnoticed. And actually, if you didn't check back to the penalty save, well, two things. First of all, the penalty should have been retaken because Little had a foot inside the area when the penalty was taken, but never mind, that's gone now. But second of all, the person first to the ball after Zanef tips it away is Little, because Little sprinted once the penalty was actually taken. And he's got a left foot. And that's an interesting thing, to actually have a left-footed player playing centrally to be able to switch play. I was quite impressed by him, really. And I think I know Chislett done some amazing free kicks, so he should be on them still, I guess. But if you let Little on some free kicks as well, I think we could get some profitable options out of that as well.
That kid who came on, the one from Cambridge, he did quite well. I thought he was very nippy.
Yeah, Sacred Janet, the one that I mentioned last week, that we just dug out, made his debut. What I found hilarious, again, with my colleagues who were all, as I said, first-timers, they kept saying, "Number seven, he's great, he's really quick, he's really engaging, attacking. Why wasn't he playing from the start?" And it's like, I don't know, I've never seen him before, I couldn't tell you.
Well, I'm going to be honest, I wasn't a fan of Janet. I thought he was on his heels, and there were a number of times where if he'd have been on his front foot, he could have been away with his pace. And so I wasn't actually that impressed with him, if I'm honest.
Well, it's all right, Bob. You're allowed your opinion, mate. It's wrong, but you're allowed it. It's cool. But, I mean, it is interesting. I'm still a little bit aggrieved about the players we've got in who are just on loan. And we got this player in from Cambridge, and we got this player in from Forest Green. They're both on loan. And, you know, the one from Cambridge, they were explicitly saying it's not, you know, there's no buyout clause or anything like that. So it just feels like we are developing players that could end up playing against us next season, you know. I know they give us a little bit more. It just feels like, isn't there someone else? Couldn't we have bought someone in who could done that job and we could sell on? Is there someone at Conference South or Conference that we could have?
I get that and I totally agree. I do wonder, I mean, because I don't see any of the academy games, and I know we've struggled, you know, in terms of, like, we need some people with a bit of experience and a bit of brute force in League Two, but maybe, unknown to us, there's a bunch of academy guys who are coming through who could be really interesting in the summer. So it might be we've got more options than we think of, and maybe there has been, as a guess, you know, suggestions that perhaps a couple of loans might be fine for now because we can keep the money and we've got players in our pocket that are coming through. I don't know, but that might be. That would be a kind of strategic plan, potentially.
I was doing a little search on Haspiller today to try and work out whether his contract was up, which unfortunately it is apparently in the summer. But while I was doing it, I noticed that there's always been a tendency of putting 17, 18-year-olds into like a London Senior Cup squad or that level. And these are players that are still eligible to play in the Youth Cup. So if you look at the team that's going to play in the London Youth Cup against Leeds on Wednesday, I think it is, 1st of February? Yeah, Wednesday this week. So you've got the kid, I've forgotten his name completely now. There's a Welsh kid, in attacking midfield player in central midfield. Mason's a right back. And Mason will play for us next year, I think. Or at least we'll challenge in the first team squad. Mason's on loan at Basingstoke, but no, this kid's not even on loan yet. Max, someone, I want to say. Anyway, central midfield player, attacking midfield player. He's got about 15 goals from attacking midfield for the under-18s. He scored a couple against franchise last week when they thrashed him 4-1. And, yeah, he's properly... Again, you want him to have a chance in the first team, or at least in and around the first team. I think he might have been in the squad once last season. But again, he'll only be 16-17. Once the FA Youth Cup campaign is finished, unless they beat Leeds, of course, then I think a couple of them might get an opportunity.
Was it Paris? There's a guy called Paris, not that Paris.
Harris Locke is one of the forwards, and Aaron Zazu is the other forward who's in that squad. He's also been in the first team squad. But no, Morgan Williams is the lad's name. I've got there eventually.
Bendel, I guess, is going to be in the squad next year, around the first team properly next year, my thought.
Yeah, Ben, it looks like we've got a good relationship there with Eastbourne. He's gone straight to Eastbourne. He's played straight away from the start, the majority of the game for the first two games. That's exactly what Curry did, and obviously he's taken off this year. So if Bendel can do what Curry did, then that's another. Again, Bendel turned 18 last week. He passed his driving test about a month ago. So you can't make some allowance for these kids, you know.
What's your thoughts? What's the general feeling on Zach Robinson?
Yeah, I was thinking about this as well. I don't know. That is odd, isn't it? I don't know. We've got him back, but we're not doing anything with him. So that's a bit weird. I don't know. Maybe I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that the Scottish First Division is a pretty poor standard. You know, it's somewhere between League Two and Conference. So it'd be I'd like to see him get a chance. I think he's obviously got a goal in him. And there's no team that doesn't need a goal in them. So I'd like to see him get a chance down there.
I wonder, did he bring him back thinking, if I can't get anything better in the transfer window, then we'll keep Robinson for the rest of the season? And if I can, then maybe we'll let him go back to Dundee. I'm just speculating. I've got nothing to base that on whatsoever. The only one I think they are releasing will be Senior, which is fair enough, because apart from Adam, no one really, you know, necessarily has rated him.
But we always have our doubts about Adam and his judgment.
Absolutely. This is part of the same old one with Bob. You have to call out every other guest contributor because they don't know what they're talking about. By the referees, really.
But Adam's favourite player of all time is Nesta Guinness-Walker. So there's nothing you can do with that information. And I genuinely think that's only because he found out he's related to Adam. That's the only reason I can assume.
That is not even true. That's a bonus point, but it's not even true.
You're a Star Wars fan. You wanted him on the scene. You thought there was some sort of lightsaber thing that would be going on. I get you. It's fine. It's cool.
Seriously, if you bring out my favourite players, I tell you what, they've been doing things. You guys just haven't seen what they've been doing.
They have been doing things, probably playing with their Star Wars players.
Nesta's only in a one-year deal. I don't think it'll be renewed, put it that way.
But, okay. Oh, mate, we're all going to miss a show. Oh, we are. We are. We're going to miss a show. It was just so exciting. I'm going to follow his career forever. I'm always going to love him. I don't have a bad word to say about him, despite the imaginary illness. We don't get to see players like that.
He did have an illness. Transferitis, Bob.
Yeah.
It happens every January. A player gets transferitis. Palmer had it last year. It's a weird thing.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I mean, for me, I think I would say, and I argued it last week, I would say Assal's the best player of the AFC Wimbledon era.
Yeah.
Since 2002. I think he's arguably the best player.
Yeah, no, it's been an absolute privilege to watch him grow, and fair play to Robbo as well for giving him his chance. Not many people would have done that. I think, including me, I wouldn't have given that chance either. But, like, oh my God, what a dream watching a player grow like that. But we're going to have to let him go. That's the way it goes, isn't it? And it's going to be the same with Jack Curry and Shane Biller. And I'll be supporting them for their whole careers as well.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's like you say, though. I'm oddly less worried about Jack Curry, because even if he goes, and I really hope he doesn't, it can only go for silly money, because we've been knocking him back. And I think we've got a year and a half of his contract left. So there's, you know, it's going to be silly money if he goes. So if he does go, you go, okay, fair dues. We're getting a fair whack. And there'll hopefully be a sell on clause. But it's Huss that I worry about, because he is out of contract in June. And, you know, he's just starting to really get going. And I've got a bad feeling he's probably got one of these agents. I feel all of them have got one of these agents that is just going, you know, wait. Don't sign anything. Wait, because I reckon I can get you a decent deal. But then look at all the players that you feel that agents have done that, and they haven't got on. There was one particular who just went nowhere. You know, we offered him a deal, and he went nowhere because they thought he ended up at Crewe, didn't he?
But if you're out of contract, isn't that going to make the deal worse potentially, because you're not trying to.
No, because you'll just get a decent. The idea is someone. You know, there's no fee involved, so someone just offers you a decent wage somewhere else. You know, so he'll get paid more.
Yeah, but wouldn't the fee thing be related to the agent? Do you know what I mean? So wouldn't the agent be involved in the fee part of it rather than the wage part? So wouldn't they want him in a contract because they can negotiate a better fee and they would get some of that? I don't know. I mean, I don't know how it works.
Yes, you're right, because the agent's not taking any of the player's fee.
Possibly. Who knows? Okay, I'm going to move the stream of consciousness along, because we obviously just talked about someone like a Sal being, and obviously Rudani before him, who've been good transfer fees for the club in recent times, but also been famous folk heroes for some of the younger fans amongst the fan brethren, so to speak. But this is what I was going to ask Mr. Walshy, and that we can kind of kick off talking about Walshy and his time as a Wimbledon fan. Going way back to when your first game was and who your first ever favourite Womble as a player would have been.
Well, I got adopted onto the St Ilia estate at the age of 9 years old, and I was already a fan of non-league football. I was a Bognor Regis Town fan. I'd played for the under-8s or something like that at Bognor Regis Town. And so I came to South London, an absolute fan of non-league football, and there was this beacon in the distance, Wimbledon FC. They were the non-league team, basically, of the country at the time. And so, like, I bought into that, slowly went along. I probably didn't call myself a Wimbledon fan until they got in the league. But by that time, I'd become friends with Ivor Heller. I got a job in a supermarket where Ivor Heller was like 14 years old and already running the bakery. And then he became a mate, and he introduced me to the Batsford boys. And I just became a fan. I bought into it from there, really. I mean, I'd already bought into it for football reasons. And then Ivor gave me personal reasons to buy into it as well. And so he introduced me to the Batsford boys, who I ended up playing football with, growing up with, and still happen to be friends with now. So that's why I'm a Womble. If you cut me, I've got yellow and blue blood. I am a Womble through and through. I just love it so much. And I'm so proud when I walk through Plough Lane, I could burst.
Good boy. Good boy indeed. Does that make you an adopted Batsford boy then? Because I've seen they have a few get-togethers and you count, I suppose, as one of those.
Oh, no. Well, there's two terms of the Batsford boys. Obviously, you've got the team that were the Batsford boys. But, like, we were just a group of kids who knocked about on the West Bank. And we got fed up with our end getting taken by Northern people coming down and getting Larry. And we sort of formed a little group. We were underage drinkers and slowly then the Batsford Arms came out and we were all old enough to drink. And yeah, it just all came from that. These are my pals, you know, they're my absolute buddies. We just grew up together on the West Bank.
So were you going up and down the lanes and the trains and whatever of the country following Wimbledon in the way that before, well, obviously it's all sanitised now, but you used to have like beer trains where all the players would just pile in with them, with the fans afterwards as well.
Yeah, I had sort of two or three different approaches to going to away games. There were a couple of seasons, like when we were going up and down in the third and fourth division, where I went to every game home and away. Our last relegation season from the third division, like before this one, I actually only missed two games.
Only 40 years ago, kids.
Yeah, only 40 years ago. So, like... Yeah, I was always going to loads of games, as many games as I could. Then when we started creeping up the leagues, I started hanging about with Big Charlie Manson and Buggy and John Perry and that lot, and going to away games and having long days out, knowing where all the real ale pubs were. And that was my middle age bit. And now I'm an old boy. I go to as many games as I can and probably drink a lot less.
I remember talking to you, Walshy, about, I'm sure one of your favourite, but it was Galliers. Steve Galliers, midget. It's just like, you know.
Yeah.
He was the player, because he was a bit naughty, wasn't he? He had a bit of a bite about him.
Yeah, I loved him. He was actually quite a good mate. He was always like really kind. And I actually introduced him to the woman who was the mother of his son, Joe. I actually introduced him. So like that's a claim to fame. But yeah, I used to knock about with them. Like I had nights out with Stuart Evans, nights out with different players. Dean Thomas was actually a mate of mine before he went off to Germany. They used to speak to us and talk to us, and if you know, and I actually had a few five-a-side kickabouts with Dean Thomas in Tolworth, which was funny because he could kick the ball harder than anyone I've ever seen in my life. Ever.
You know, Gagey is he runs a pub up in Dronfield near Sheffield now.
Yeah,
I saw some random link he did, and he posted a link to Dean Thomas as a wedding singer. I don't know what he does professionally, but apparently on the side, he's now a wedding singer, and he's doted. He croons quite well, you know.
That's mental. That is,
what does Steve Galliers do these days? Where is he? Because has he been down Plough Lane? I mean, he'd be a hero's welcome, wouldn't he? If he came down the lane.
He doesn't actually like football. He really doesn't. Like, even when he was a Chorley player, he just doesn't really like football. He's just really good at it. And, like, people kept offering him money to play it. And like, he doesn't really like football. He genuinely doesn't.
That's crazy. His career is... That's crazy.
Yeah, didn't like it. Don't like football.
The other one who's like that, then, is Eric Young, who, I mean, he's an absolute hero. I mean, if he came down Plough Lane, the place would go mental. He's just... He's an absolute hero, but he's completely shuns football. I mean, he doesn't talk about it at all, is it? I think he's deliberately, you know, fallen off the face of the earth.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't get it. I can't imagine, like, being that good at football and not actually enjoying it.
Did you ever knock about with John Leslie? Because if you did, I think Mark's going to faint.
Oh, no, mate. He was just my hero. He was one of my heroes. When I first turned up, I remember when Wimbledon signed him, again, it was before I ever professed to be a Wimbledon fan, but I was going there quite a lot. But a skillful little bugger. And all my mates like Steve Elson and that, when I was kids, they were just his biggest fans. They loved him so much. Like, so it was hard not to buy into it. Very skillful. He was like a Ubisoft. He didn't always know where he was going, but you couldn't get the ball off him.
Here's a story that may predate Adam, but Walshy would probably remember this one. So in one of those relegation seasons when we just had crazy players playing everywhere because we had injuries and suspensions or whatever, John Leslie, who's a super sleuth of a striker, really, ended up playing right back. And we played Oxford United midweek sometime. And it's about March 1982, I want to say. Might be 83. And for some reason, Leslie was playing right back. And Leslie scored an own goal playing right back. And we lost 3-2. And obviously, I was quite upset. I was like 12 or something. So we got home and I burst into tears. I don't know why I burst into tears. It's just a football game, you know. But it's what football does to you sometimes. Anyway, and my dad said, what are we going to do now when we got home? And I guess he just meant, you know, we're going to have a cup of tea, we're going to go to bed or whatever. And I said, I'm going to support women for the rest of my life. And burst into tears and went to bed. Sorry, I digress. Well, she'll remember the game anyway, I'm sure.
Yeah, very well.
But John Lesley shouldn't be playing right back. But I was going to ask you, Walsh, presumably, therefore, fast forwarding a few years now, I mean, we've all got memorabilia around our houses and so on and so forth about the 88 Cup final. What was your memory of that day?
It was a weird one. I was 25, so, you know, at prime of my life, I had a good job and everything was wonderful. And I couldn't get a ticket, but Andy Watson, Mr. Andy Thirsty McSwirsty Watson, came around the day before with a ticket for me, and so I got to go there. I got absurdly drunk. It was so hot in the queue getting in, I think that I pretty much flaked out, but because the queue was so big, I managed to stay on my feet, and I think we won 1-0.
Yes, we did. You remember that much then?
Yeah.
If you were drunk already, then what happened afterwards?
Well, what I did was I went to Ladbrokes and I collected my 670 quid for a 66-1 bet on us to win the cup. And I got really drunk for the week. I was there in the middle being held up by other people still when they got the cup out of the town hall. And I never got back to my house till the Monday. I never got back to where I lived till the Monday because obviously I had a pocket full of money. We're drunk as a skunk.
Proverbial, yeah.
Skunk. I said skunk instead of so yeah.
I can't believe we got that far before something had to be.
I love it. The best day of my life. Nothing can ever take that away. Like, I was just 25. I'd watched it from the beginning, and that was ridiculous, of course.
Just trying to get context.
I remember talking to Jonesy like this, is that as the same old Wombles, we've been lucky. I mean, I was very lucky when I started supporting them to see us go up through the leagues and to win the FA Cup. And you never, you know, like as a kid growing up, you never thought that was unusual. So that's what I do. I support this side. They go up through the leagues, they win the cup. And then to be in the top league for all those years and then to kind of like do it again, do you know what I mean? To get booted out and then to go through that amazing experience of us setting up again, go all the way through the leagues and have some amazing experiences and journeys and to get in there, you know. And I think for a lot of people, they've been, you know, supporting the Dons for the last 10 years where they're saying not much has been going on, do you know what I mean? But for us, it's been a journey, and to be now at Plough Lanes. Same old Wombles.
Yeah, it's madness what we've done. If you explain it to someone in a pub who doesn't understand much about football, it sounds like you're a bullshitter who's on cocaine. Of course you and your mates have started a football club. Yeah, of course you have. Yeah, of course you've just built a £32 million stadium in the richest part of the world. Yeah, of course you have. Yeah, of course you have, mate. Yeah. Keep taking the drugs.
I was explaining this story to a friend of mine who came to the game on Saturday, and we were standing outside the shop, and as I was explaining it to her, and I'd got to sort of the time roughly of about 2002, completely coincidentally, Chris Stewart started walking past us. So I stopped him and just said, oh, by the way, some bloke stood up in a community centre and said, all I want to do is watch football. And the look on Chris's face is like, oh my God, yeah, again. So here's an urban myth I've heard that you can confirm or deny, Walshy. Is it true that around the time that the whole rebirth or whatever you want to call it started, 2002, that at that point you were actually the landlord of the Fox and Grapes in Wimbledon Village, when we were all drinking there?
No, I was the landlord of Fox and Grapes in the late 90s.
Okay. And
actually, it's a very different story of where I was when we reformed in 2002. So, like, I don't know how much you want to go into it, but I just got out of prison when we'd started Just got out of prison when we started AFC Wimbledon in 2002.
Was that anything to do with Garden Gnomes?
No, it wasn't to do with the Fox and Grapes or Garden Gnomes. It was, anyway.
Something else. Moving along.
But, like, I was very proudly the landlord of the Fox and Grapes on the, I think it was the 25th anniversary of the Cup Final or something, 1997, 98. I was definitely there when Labour won the election, which was very odd, being the landlord of the Fox and Grapes when Labour have won Wimbledon. not quite the right time in there.
But were there any players coming in? You know, anyone knocking around Wimbledon Village drinking in the boozer there?
Not the players so much, because it had lost the contact with the football club for a few years, which is why I think the owners contacted me to take over the pub to get the connection back with the football club and everything. Although it didn't work out particularly well, it was good thinking on their part. It did actually reconnect. You know, we had a couple of massive nights that we could do with the football club, you know, got an Evening Standard, everything. You know, there's a Wimbledon night at the Fox and Grape. So yeah, made them a load of money, but it didn't work out well.
Okay, fast forwarding again then, this is where you and Matt obviously come into connection, that you were involved obviously when some bloke decided that this story was also wonderful, he'd write a play about it and set it to music. So how did that come about?
Well, that was weird. It was obviously Matt had written a brilliant play. I'm a comedian, I'm in entertainment, so I was going, is there any chance I can get in there? And I actually had an audition for the show and wasn't good enough. Actually, if you look at the actors that they had in the show, no wonder. But what I did get to do was sing the opening song. It got recorded and it was played at all the shows on, like, leading up, and including the show at Wimbledon Theatre with 600 people. So I'm sitting behind the curtain at Wimbledon Theatre hearing my recorded song played out in front of 600 Wimbledon fans. Very proud of that. And actually, it was a magnificent show as well. It was a really magnificent show. So to even have my name on the programme for that, I'm very proud of that. So that, yeah. And also, I actually remember Niall and Matt's two young brothers on the West Bank as very young kids. They were almost connected at the shoulder, and I remember them. And I got to know them over the years of AFC Wimbledon. So that's been a real pleasure too.
Pleasure for us, Bob. I thought, didn't you perform at Wimbledon Theatre? I thought that you actually stood at the front. So when the show was at the theatre, I swear you came on stage at the beginning and did the piece live.
No, I came on stage in the middle and I played a Luton supporter.
I had someone from another magazine come on and play a Tottenham fan. I've completely rewritten it. I'm hoping to get it on in June this year at the club. But, you know...
Well, I'll sing the opening song again. I'd love to sing the opening song again. I've got a big cabaret part in my new show now, so, like, I'm actually a proper singer, so, like, you should think about that.
Mate, your shows are legendary.
They are.
So you mentioned earlier on, Bob, how does football and comedy come together then? I mean, we've heard of Jeff Northcott, the other Wimbledon fan. The second Wimbledon fan after you, obviously, who happens to be a comedian. But how, you know, are the well-known comedians particularly into football? Kevin Day, I know, is into it a little bit, but
there's a section of comedians, like, from top to bottom. We all talk about football and in little private Facebook groups. Football's obviously massive, like, amongst the working class comedians, and they're mostly the ones I know. And we talk about it daily. And if anyone wants to know what's going on at Wimbledon, they talk to me. If I want to know what's going on at Stockport, I'll talk to someone else. It's good. There's a very strong football culture amongst comedians. Just not the ones who are making it at the top now.
Mark Thomas has transferred to us, hasn't he? So Mark Thomas is now our Don, which is crazy. I was expecting Mark Steele to come with him in a 2-for-1 transfer deal.
How did that happen?
I think, to be honest with you, I just think Mark Thomas, you know, as a story goes, as a, you know, a collective who, and it's fan-owned, we're very much in, you know, what he believes in. So it completely makes sense. And you know, Jezza, you know, my mate Jezza, he does some stuff on the circuit as well. We brought him in from Leeds, so he's transferred in as well. So we get a few in. But Bob's been there from the start, man.
I was just really lucky, to end up being a Womble. Like, how can you, like, there were times in the Premiership where I stopped going to games as much because it was so expensive and so difficult, like, and you were treated so badly by the police when you were there, that I sort of stopped bothering to go. But, like, how can you stop going when you're a Womble? It's just mental. We just keep doing crazy things that make you proud. So it's like, how can you stop?
And now, of course, you've got your own brand taking you around the country, featuring in Edinburgh quite a lot of wrong comedy. Obviously, you can't really give us any examples of wrong comedy because it would be far too expletive and post-watershed, I guess.
Yeah, a bit too much for Spotify, I reckon. But yeah, no, wrong comedy, it's just been my little baby for a while. I've done 10 years of free shows at the Edinburgh Free Fringe and doing all the little fringe shows around the country, like the Bath Comedy Festival, the Ram Comedy Festival, the Greater Manchester Comedy Festival. But now, this year, I'm taking a real chance. A promoter has come up to me and sort of like understood what I do and offered me to put on some paid shows. So, like, in the Glasgow International Comedy Festival from the 16th of March to the 2nd of April, I'm doing 12 shows. But you've got to pay now. I'm taking the big step up this year. And then in Edinburgh this year, I'm probably not going to be doing my normal free show. I'm going to be doing a paid show. So I'm actually taking a big step up this year. Is there enough people who like offensive comedy to pay me a living? I don't know. We'll see.
I hope so. Yeah, here's a little review I found online today. Bob Walsh's love letter to Sick and Twisted Humour will feature, as before, a cast of the country's most offensive comedians joining him on stage to push the boundaries of good taste and decency. It's an hour of distasteful comedy that doesn't pretend to be anything but outrageous. So, you know, like Ron Seal, it does what it says in the tin, I guess.
Yeah, no, we're not lying to anyone. You know what you're going to get. And right now, I've just got to find out if people are willing to pay for it. Last couple of years, at the Edinburgh Fringe doing free shows, I'm turning away people most nights. You know, people just want to come and see it because they like the, you know, they just want an hour off of being politically correct. and that's what we do, I hope. It's an hour off. It's an hour off of being sensible and politically correct and kind. And they're just jokes. And it, even some people don't even get it that I've actually got some rules. I don't do any jokes about real people. Like, all my jokes are really offensive, but they're about imaginary people. Is that offensive? You know, if that's offensive, please don't ever watch a film again or read a novel ever again.
There's nothing about anyone's fucking shirt or anything like that.
If anyone turns up at my gig in Wimbledon Colours, I will do the Milton Keynes joke. I have only done the Milton Keynes joke in three different places. FC United of Manchester was one of them. But if anyone turns up at any of my shows in Wimbledon Colours, I will do the Milton Keynes joke. And I might just get banned for that joke.
Okay, well,
what happens if someone turns up, God forbid, in the franchise shirt?
It's never happened, but someone actually did come up to me after a show last year and sort of say, oh, you're a Wimbledon fan, are you? And I said, yeah, I'm lifelong and proud. He said, oh, he goes, I'm a Milton Keynes fan. I think he expected me to be impressed by it. I think he almost thought that he was my brother.
What?
The way he approached it, like, oh, I'm a Milton Keynes fan, like, and wanted to give me a cuddle. And I sort of like, I stopped the cuddle and invited him to leave.
Well, you wanted to punch him, really, just be honest.
Yeah, no, like 20 years ago, I would have punched him, but then, like, you know. But yeah, no, really, like, I honestly think he thought that he had some connection with me, which was the weirdest thing.
Estranged third cousin twice removed.
He always did have a connection with you, Bob.
I could listen to Bob's stories all night, but I guess I'll have to buy him some beer to be able to do that. So
we're
going to wrap it up there. And that's just been wonderfully fabulous and a little different anecdote to the normal Same Old Wombles. The way we finish the pod every week, Bob, is we throw out a random number and the number relates to something to do with AFC Wimbledon. So it could be like, our top goal scorer was Josh Davis, and he scored 9 goals. So
yeah,
it's number 9, and you have to guess what the answer is. I just give you a number, all right? Adam thinks they're impossible to get. He's already looking at me like I'm making his life an absolute misery. But I try and make him relatively easy each week, and apparently I never do. So anyway, I'll throw out some numbers. So today's numbers, what are today's numbers? I've now lost where I was. Today's numbers are... Let's go with Matt first. Matt's number is 4. What is the answer to number 4?
Oh, now, I can only assume this refers back to earlier in the show, where actual fact it was 8, Harry Penn, who scored the goal, but he was playing number 4. So the golden goal ticket was 4. So that's the answer to that question. You can move on now, Mark. I think I've nailed that one.
Wrong. Wrong.
No, that was right. I was right, but not in your mind. You know, I had the right answer to the number 4.
In a totally different mind.
I know what it was. It's the only part of the BBC light, like formation they got right prior to the game was that it was 4 people at the back. The rest of it, some random person had pressed the wrong buttons on BBC lineup and had 4-2-2-2-2-2, which is ridiculous. So yeah, that's the answer. 4 at the back.
Anyone have any ideas? I've put you out of misery again.
Yeah.
Okay, so the answer is, in the last 11 games, some draws, some wins, obviously, but we're doing rather well, rather better than earlier in the season. We've only let in 4 goals. 4 goals in 11 games. Which is pretty
impressive. I like that stat a lot.
Absolutely.
I'm an old Sunday league defender. I think you've got to get that right first. Proper. That's well done, JJ.
Can you imagine Bob Walsh kicking your heels or your shins or anything, frankly? Painful.
Well, okay, I played for AFC Parkgate, who were the Batsford boys team. I also played for the Wimbledon away supporters, the Wasps. And I've also played for the supporters club. So I know how to kick people.
Good work indeed. Right, okay. So we'll give Bob a number then. Bob's number is 38. This is
38. Oh, 38 years since we got in the Premiership.
Would be not a bad one, actually. I try and make him a little bit more current than that.
No, ain't got a Scooby.
Mr. Matt is going to disappear. Thank you, Mr. Matt. Always a pleasure. Never a chore.
See you guys.
Same old Wombles.
Awesome, mate. I'll catch you soon.
See you later, Matt. Love you.
Thank you, Matt. Okay, the answer for Bob is Ayub Asal had the record before he left of the most number of offsides in the whole of League Two.
I should have got that.
How bizarre and obscure is that? And quickly for Adam, Adam's one is number 1. Just 1.
1? That's the name of our... That's the number of our awesome goalie. I have no idea, Mark. Why would I know? 1? They managed to sell 1 cup of tea at half-time because they ran out of hot water.
The simple answer is we've only lost 1 game in the last 14. All those clean sheets, few goals conceded, 1 defeat in 14 games, which is pretty impressive.
That is really good.
Absolutely. So, gentlemen, we'll have you and leave you. We've been the same old Wombles. We've been episode 23. Massive, massive thank you to Mr. Bob Walshy Walsh. He's won comedy up in Edinburgh. Thank you, Bob. Always a pleasure to come back soon.
Glasgow first.
Okay. Check him out online. Bob Walshy Walsh. Won comedy. Glasgow first. Glasgow's night. Good night out. Full stop. I can recommend that for sure. Thank you, Mr. Adam. Thank you, Matt, who's disappeared off. That was episode 23. We've been the same old Wombles. And tune in and find us on Spotify and other places, but not Twitter Spaces, wherever else you can find your podcast every week. Usually out and issued every Tuesday morning, subject to how difficult it is to give Adam the right type of music to play. But we know that, like the Wombles, we are hard to beat. Thank you and good night.